KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley.
We are from Hayward.
We're from the Inner Sunset.
I live in the Inner Sunset.
I live in Sausalito.
Coming up, Black women in ballet. We'll hear the history and why the art form has excluded Black people for so long.
When you watch something like Swan Lake, the lines of the swans look identical, white, exactly the same. If you put a brown body in that line, it causes a break to the eye and it draws attention.
We'll meet some dancers, including one who's working to make ballet more inclusive by bringing it into Black neighborhoods.
And the guy just walked by in the middle of the shoot. He's like, that's what I'm talking about, ballerina in the hood.
It's Breaking the Line, a special presentation of the Stoop podcast on Cross Currents. Today, it's a special presentation of the Stoop podcast hosted by me and Leela Day. When she was a little girl, a ballet teacher told Leela that her back should be straight on the ground, no light shining through, and Leela just couldn't make it happen. Her body wouldn't do it. Her dreams to be a ballet dancer disappeared. The world of classical ballet is extremely difficult to break into, and for those who have darker skin, there's a lot that comes with that. Especially when you're the only. Here's the episode, Breaking the Line.
I was in this dance class, and Stacy and Jenny were in class with me.
Oh, no, not Stacy and Jenny.
Stacy and Jenny, I totally remember their names. And our ballet teacher asked us all to lie on the ground. There's three of us. I don't know why there's only three of us in a class, but that's how it was.
Okay.
And Stacy was another Black ballerina, and Jenny was a white ballerina, and she asked us to lie on the ground, and she said, I want everyone's back to be straight on the ground. I want everyone's spine to be touching the ground completely. I should not be able to put my hand under your back at all or see any light, you know, when and if I look. And me and Stacy, we're just pressing, trying to get our backs straight to the ground, and it just wasn't happening.
Yeah.
It wasn't happening.
It's the booty.
It's the curves.
It's the arch.
It's the arch. It's just like the way our bodies were shaped. And I remember Stacy saying, I didn't say anything. I was just trying. And I remember Stacy saying, our bodies don't do that. And that just stuck with me. Like she was just, you know, one, that she stood up to the teacher, and two, she was kind of right. Like my back would never be straight on the ground.
She was onto something.
She was onto something
that you were thinking in your head.
That I was thinking, and I was just thinking, well, me and Stacy are the two Black dancers, you know, in this group. Like, does that mean our bodies aren't made for this? I don't know. So basically, I kind of phased out the ballet scene in my life. I just thought, you know, I'm just not built for it. Did other things.
It's not fair. And it goes against everything we teach our children in terms of you are perfect the way you are.
Mm-hmm.
So this is some nonsense. Let's talk about it.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
Stories from across the Black diaspora
that we need to talk about.
My cousins were water and grease girls, and I couldn't be a water and grease girl.
That's what I'm talking about, ballerina in the hood.
We be Gullah Geechee United people.
When a Black woman walks up to the desk in labor, what preconceived notions do you have about her?
I didn't even know we had a hair chart.
I am a ballerina. I dance, I move, I'm the epitome of beauty. Black skin, white leotard. White skin, black leotard. Brown skin is my leotard.
As a society, when one thinks of a ballerina, what comes to mind? You know, the images that one conjures up is someone very soft, someone very sweet, someone very angelic, a princess, a queen, a fairy.
So that's Aisha Ash. She's a dancer. a former ballerina.
Ballet is a side of the African-American woman that we don't often see, or that doesn't often get promoted. This sort of soft, angelic, ethereal, meek side of us that I feel that we all have. As every woman, we have the angry, we have the sass, we have the softness, the humility, and the sweetness. And so that's, ballet touches that side of me, that part of my personality.
Aisha totally looks like a ballerina. Mm-hmm. You know, she's petite, and she's got those long limbs, and she wears her hair pulled back in a bun. And she's performed with the New York City Ballet and Lines Ballet Company. And she's been a dancer since she was 5 years old. But it hasn't always been that smooth.
I was in the School of American Ballet, and they do these evaluations. They have these things called mid-year evaluations. And it was during one of those evaluations that one of my favorite teachers actually had told me, you know, I just don't think ballet is for you.
Okay, I mean, that is strange because everything about Aisha screams ballet, mm-hmm. like you just said.
Yeah, everything. I mean, but this is the thing in the ballet world. I talked to a lot of dancers who also told me that they were encouraged to go into other styles like modern or contemporary dance. But they were like, no, I want to be a ballerina. Mm-hmm. But even if you do get there, you know, to some of those major classical ballet companies, some other stuff comes up.
Once we got there, we then get typecasted. We get to a ballet company. We are the warrior princess. We are the more exotic role, the more modern, dark warrior princess. And I think that that's how society sees women of color. That's the image that's constantly pushed. That's fine, we do that, and we do that well. But that is not all we do. That is not our entire story.
Aisha did get her dream to dance in a mainstream classical ballet company. She joined the New York City Ballet.
And she remembers the early days of dancing with the company.
When dancers are dancing, you start in the back of the room a lot of times or on a diagonal, and you do your little combination to the front of the room. Then you part ways and you kind of come to the back of the room and you wait for your turn again. Well, while you're waiting for your turn, a lot of times you have your hand on your hip and you're kind of huffing and puffing because you're tired and it was hard, and you're just kind of waiting, like you see athletes sometimes just kind of sitting there waiting. And so I had my hands on my hips and I was waiting in the back, you know, for my turn to go again. And another Caucasian dancer had walked by me. They were older than me, and they were more senior in the company. And they just stood in front of me with their hands on their hips, and they just rolled their neck and went, And I was like, so your immediate reaction is like most people. You're angry, you're offended, you know, and you want to kind of, you know, shout something back. But at the same time, you know, you realize that, well, then that's just going to continue to feed into that stereotype. Not that I don't have the right to be angry, but I always understood that that's not going to solve the problem.
So this dancer is sort of doing this head rolling, finger swinging stereotype thing to Aisha. And, you know, all the while she's just standing there waiting in line like the other girls are.
So messed up. So offensive.
Mm-hmm. And so Aisha responded, right? But she looked at it more as a learning opportunity for the other dancers.
Mm-hmm. And literally every dancer that was standing in the back of the room had their hands exactly like me on their hips. And so I looked at all of them, and I looked at this dancer who said that to me, and I just kind of motioned with my hands. I was like, but everybody has their hands on their hips. Everybody's standing like this. And they just turned bright red.
And there were some other challenges.
When I was playing the Arabian in the Nutcracker, which we all wear, you know, this sort of costume that has this long gold veil, right? And it's the Arabian, right? And, you know, the dancers put like rhinestones, and they have the headdress, and everybody has the same costume. But when I did it, the comment that was made was, you know, I was so disturbed by Aisha Ash up there with her long blonde wig looking like Little Kim.
She's talking about comments from the audience, you know, they make their comment cards and things like that.
And there was more. People were like,
it's just so disturbing just seeing, you know, this long line of girls and seeing one black body.
So all of these incidents made it harder for her to focus on the dance. She had to become like this defender of blackness within the company.
You know, I would show up to class and wear my hair out, my little puffy twists, and I found myself very angry and very rebellious.
Yeah, she was letting out all the black, right? There was just too much coming at her from different directions. And in this world of ballet, it feels like there's something different about being the only here. We're onlys in many situations, but it feels like in this case, in ballet, it's different.
Aisha was feeling this.
She remembers when she was training, working her way up to being in the New York City Ballet, when a dancer excitedly told her that one of the black dancers in the company might be on her way out.
She just kind of looked at me and said, hey, you know, Andrea Long is, you know, leaving the company, so nudge, nudge, you know. And in other words, basically saying one black dancer is leaving, they're going to need another, so there's space for you. So I entered the company with this awareness. And you're a young dancer, you've been fighting, you've been working your butt off, and you want to feel like I'm accepted because of my work and because of my artistry. And I carried that. It's terrible. You want to feel that you are appreciated and respected. And so it's horrible. It's a horrible feeling. And it definitely affects you. There's that feeling that's always there with you, with every step that you take and everything that you do.
After spending almost 8 years with the company, she left for a position at another ballet company in Switzerland. But she was torn. She had this guilt, like she was disappointing her people.
I remember leaving the New York City Ballet when I left. There was another black dancer walking across the plaza. She wasn't in New York City Ballet or the School of American Ballet. I'm not sure where she was dancing. And she stopped me and she's like, oh, I just want to tell you, you know, that, you know, I love you. I love your dancing. And it means so much to us seeing you on that stage. We are so proud of you. And I just started crying right there. And she was just like, whoa, you know, what happened? What's wrong? And I was like, I'm leaving the company. And I feel like I'm letting all of you down. I was fighting in that company because what that would stand for. And I felt like I had let her down, I let my family down.
You're listening to a special presentation of the Stoop podcast on Cross Currents. This episode is called Breaking the Line. Now let's go back and continue hearing the story of ballerina Aisha Ash.
There was a moment that my mother was watching one of the performances at New York City Ballet, and there were some black dancers behind her, which was a mistake, because they started chatting at the break. And they were like, yeah, but, you know, I don't know if she's black. She's real light-skinned. And, you know, my mother turned around. She was like, my baby is black. I was like, oh, my God, Mom. She was like, I'm like, that's the last thing they should have told was Stella Ash from Rochester that her baby wasn't black. She was like, girl, my baby is as black as you. You know, she was like, but with the lights and, you know, I guess they were, you know, but even still, yes, I'm not, you know, super, super dark. I'm caramel, right? And so there's, you know, still people that have, you know, issues even with that. You know, it's like, well, she's a little bit lighter and, you know, she's got a little bit longer hair and there's always that issue.
So even the black dancers that get these roles, that question is still coming up. Are these lead roles given to more lighter skinned dancers? There's always something.
So Aisha knew there was this perception of her being in the company, not just because she was black, you know, the token black ballerina.
Right.
But was she in the company also because she was light skinned as well?
I mean, it's amazing that it can't just be because she's a damn good dancer.
Mm-hmm. So all of this stuff was weighing on her. Their perceptions of why she's in, if she's black enough, if she leaves, will she be letting down her people? Mm. Would it be years before another black dancer entered the company?
And these are the things that aren't just fixed with a simple audition. Aisha realized it had to be part of something bigger, which was representation. People needed to know that ballerinas could look like her.
They need that visual because kids imitate what they see.
So Aisha does this thing.
Okay.
She started in her old neighborhood in downtown Rochester, New York.
I put on my tutu, I put on my pointe shoes, and I just go out on the street.
She's basically walking around town in her ballerina costume.
Her tutu.
And people come out of their houses. She shows little girls some moves. She talks to strangers in the neighborhood. People all around start just taking pictures of her.
I just want with my project and pushing those images and making sure that they see me in my ballet attire. It's important for them to see a black woman that way. It's important for them to see someone not only who looks like them, but somebody who also comes from their environment.
And people are so into it. She was out doing her thing, just, you know, hanging out in the streets in her pointe shoes, in her tutu. And she was talking to whoever wanted to chat with her about dance, where she grew up, about her costume, whatever.
One guy walked by, you know, everyone had their cameras out, and there was the police officer on his horse that he was patrolling downtown, and he had his camera out taking, you know, video from his phone. And the guy just walked by in the middle of the shoot. He's like, that's what I'm talking about, ballerina in the hood. And that just made me so happy. It was almost as if he was telling everyone, that's right, you can take a picture of her. Yes, we have queens here, and you can take a picture of her and show everybody. It was almost that I was also giving a sense of pride back to my community.
Aisha's project is called the Swan Dreams Project, and she's done photo shoots in Rochester and California, where she lives now. She goes to libraries and public spaces to just talk to strangers about dance, and she's taught free classes at her daughter's school.
And all of this is documented in photographs. Two little girls imitating Aisha's moves, doing pliés and using a chain link fence as a ballet bar. Mm. A group of young boys are smiling shyly and she poses next to them.
So cute.
Yeah. Strangers just hanging out near a car who will all stop what they're doing to see the brown ballerina.
And the things that they say and their reactions, to me, is that's what's so powerful. You know, and that's why I feel like this is why I'm here. You know, my community, my people, we need to see more of this. We need to give our kids more of this.
So dance comes in many, many forms. No one has to do or has to be, you know, a ballerina. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of black dancers that are happy and successful in lots of other styles. But we're talking specifically about ballet today because it's going through some major adjustments. Our modern ideal of what a ballerina should look like, it's starting to shift.
And that ideal actually came from George Balanchine. He's known as the father of American ballet. He was a Russian-born choreographer who co-founded the New York City Ballet and the School of American Ballet. His ideas and his aesthetic had huge influence on the ballet world.
So small head, long limbs, short torso. Like, that was the Balanchinean sort of ideal.
That's Teresa Ruth Howard. She's a dance instructor at various companies, Ailey, the Joffrey Ballet, and more. And she's a former ballerina with the Dance Theater of Harlem, which was founded in 1969. She's written a bit for Dance Magazine, and she knows a lot about ballet. Like how back in the day, the ideal ballet body was totally different.
The ballet body through eras has changed. They used to be quite short and like stocky and like tight and not hypermobile.
Okay, that sounds more like a black body.
Yeah. Before the 20th century, they were softer and rounder, a little less curvy version of me.
Mm-hmm. But they were white.
They were white. But in the last 100 years or so, professional ballerinas have all had the same look.
The idea of when you watch something like Swan Lake, that the lines of the swans look identical, right? They're all pale, white, same height, heads tilted perfectly, arms crossed exactly the same. The idea of breaking the line is if you put a brown body in that line, it causes a break to the eye and it draws attention, right? So that's where that phrase comes from.
Breaking the line.
The eye noticing something not uniform,
uh-huh,
right? And
uh-huh.
So in the case of ballet, it's a brown body. So I told Teresa, when I see a brown body in ballet, I'm thinking, oh, you know, there's a black girl.
Hey.
You know, represent.
Yes.
There she is.
It's exciting.
Yeah. So Teresa said, yep, that's the distraction.
You just proven the point that it does break the line. The minute that your eye is drawn to one specific thing in that line, you've broken the line. So I get it. It makes perfect sense to me. However, I will say that if you don't make a line, you can't break a line. right?
So there are a few companies that have become places for Black dancers to thrive. Those are the Black-founded dance companies, but not all of them are strictly ballet.
Alonzo King, Lines Ballet, Alvin Ailey, Urban Bushwomen, and Teresa danced with one of the oldest, Dance Theater of Harlem.
Dance Theater of Harlem was my Wakanda, in reference to the Black Panther movie, because that's what it felt like. You know, you enter a world where people who look like you and love what you do are all around you.
But even there, Teresa says it's complicated.
There is a level of colorism there. We don't like to talk about it. But if we're expecting white people to acknowledge their white skin privilege, then as a community, we're going to have to acknowledge the light skin privilege.
And she wrote an op-ed about this for Dance Magazine in 2017, where she asked, is ballet brown paper bagging it? And she argued that light skin privilege could even be seen in some of the Black dance companies with more fair-skinned lead dancers.
That article got mixed reactions.
The brown girls were like, yay, bravo, thank God you wrote that, right? And then the light-skinned girls were very, very quiet if they didn't say anything at all. And the ones that I did hear from were like pissed, you know, because they took it as somehow they only had their success because of their color. And that's not what I'm saying. That's not what anybody is saying.
Howard says everyone needs to have a long, hard look at what's happening in ballet and acknowledge some stuff.
I'm saying that you had an opportunity afforded you that browner skin girls probably didn't have. You know, it has that you can still dance. You're still a beautiful dancer, but you also had that opportunity because you were fairer or had a certain type of hair, you know, and that's just real.
Again, with the colorism, it keeps creeping into things.
It's a hard conversation to be having because we are truly many shades of brown, but it's hard to erase years of this crap.
Yeah, but it does seem important to ask these questions, like, is ballet brown paper bagging it? The question's now out there. We got to put it out there. And now it's in the minds of both Black and white companies. The solution is more unlearning, calling it out and talking about it.
Breaking the line, breaking the mindset too.
Then there's people like me who thought there was never a place for them in ballet. They gave up. There are places for some of us dreamers to embrace the ballerina within. This is a class in Oakland where all bodies, all shades, all ages are moving across the room. It's called Ballet for Black and Brown Bodies.
My name is Aaliyah Baker, and I teach ballet for Black and Brown Bodies.
We're going to draw our leg up. One leg is going to come up to passe, and we're going to hold it there.
Once we get into the movement and everyone's trying, they become really supportive of each other, which is great, and it ends up being a space where folks sort of put down whatever armor they're carrying around with them in the world and really can just relax and have a good time.
So this is a class for everyone who was intimidated, everyone who was turned down for not feeling like they fit in the ballet world, all those people to just let it out. The class is packed with people like Noni Session.
When I was a kid, ballet classes were expensive.
Noni's in her 40s, and she's got a huge smile, and she's wearing her brand new ballet slippers.
While I was in the class, I'm like, this is a room full of little Black girls who dreamed of being ballerinas, but never could for all the reasons.
They dance to hip-hop and soul instead of classical. And then they waltz across the room however they like, as long as it's on a 1-2-3 beat. They can improvise and they laugh. And for people like Noni, it reminds her of the parts of her that she's always been proud of, even though she's never become a ballerina.
When I was a little kid, my sister used to make me point my toe, and she would tell me what a perfect toe I had and how I should be a ballerina. So I felt like I was a little kid with my sister pointing my toe perfectly. So silly.
am a ballerina. I am everything you want to be. I am strong. I am curvy. I am beautiful because I said so. I am a ballerina. Watch me move.
You've been listening to Breaking the Line, a special Cross Currents presentation of the Stoop podcast. It was edited by Jen Chien with engineering by Seth Samuel, music by Daoud Anthony. Support for the Stoop comes from California Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the NEH. Find them at calhum.org. And a special thanks to the NPR Story Lab. You can hear more episodes at thestoop.org. Our Cross Currents engineers today are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. The content manager is Shirin Adil. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.